This is Jerry Pippin, and we're in Eureka Springs at the conference going on here. It's an interesting conference, been around for a long time. Grant Cameron is our guest, and Grant, Larry Dickin, our executive producer, said, whatever you do, get a hold of this guy this time. We've crossed paths a couple of times, but either you're talking to somebody or I'm talking to somebody. It's a pleasure to have you on, finally.
Well, thanks for the kind words, and it is a busy place. There's lots of interaction going on outside the convention hall, and that's usually what happens. You get stuck with people, and you really want to see people and do things, but lots of times you're tied up talking to people.
Well, you know, the interesting thing I thought about when in Las Vegas at the Crash Retrieval Conference, you gave this talk on the presidents and had quite a... you always do an entertaining thing anyway. You always have lots of little bits and things you drop in.
Yeah, I sometimes don't... I figure, like, in my 25 or 30 years of working at this, I found that lots of times people either believe you or don't believe you, so I figure you might as well have a little bit of humor with it and sort of not take it so seriously. But yeah, the thing at Las Vegas with the presidents and the crash flying saucers was something that was well received, because a lot of people don't really realize how much the presidents were involved and the fact that they're like common people like you and I and are very interested in psychic phenomena and UFOs and want to sort of figure what's going on. The thing is to try to get the material out of the presidential archives and find out exactly how much did they really know.
Well, if I remember, that was back in November, but I think it went back to Roosevelt at least.
Yeah, Roosevelt was the first one I started with, and I just picked that stuff up recently, and actually got another story here about his interest in the phenomena. And Eleanor was also very interested in UFOs and actually had done some interviews with people who had UFO sightings.
I think she had a radio program or something.
Yeah, she had a radio program, and there was two pilots from Arkansas, a very famous case back in 1950, and she actually made the move to get these people on her radio show and said she wanted them on her TV show, whatever it was that she had, and interviewed these two guys. So she had an interest in it, as well as the president, who was also interested in astrology and psychic phenomena and stuff like this. And I spent a lot of time trying to get material, and bits and pieces come out. Each conference I go to, I pick up another few stories that I'll head to the whatever presidential archives is involved and try to track down the story.
And the interesting thing, you know, since we're here in Arkansas, I guess I want to ask you, I always hear the story about Bill Clinton getting... you know, trying to get some information. In fact, he got the story I always hear that he asked Hubble. That's the reason he gave Hubble the job, to find out a little bit about UFOs. Is there any truth for that?
Yeah, there is truth to. He asked Hubble to find out two questions: who killed JFK and are there UFOs? And Hubble was actually asked about it later by a guy who's doing a UFO documentary. And at that point, then he sort of shot up and said, everything that I know that the president asked me, I put in the book, and you'll have to ask the president yourself. But Clinton and Hillary is actually, according to the research I did, Hillary was even more interested in the phenomena than Bill Clinton was. And I had talked to a fellow who was attached to the CIA, who told me that even before they came into Washington, they were rumored to be looking for stuff. And Bill and Hillary spent a lot of time, didn't get very much success because they were Democrats, and what I found is that Democrats generally don't get as much material as Republican presidents, because they're not tied into the military-industrial complex like a Republican president would be. But the Clintons were very, very interested. There's actually two researchers that I know of who were contacted. One was William LaParle, who claimed that Hillary had tried to contact him to get material on UFOs, and the other one was the name is escaping me. Daryl Sims had done research on implants, and some of his tapes had gone to Hillary Clinton on that he had produced VHS tapes. So they were very, very interested, and in fact, Bill made a number of statements. If you recall back, Ronald Reagan had talked about the alien invasion. Bill Clinton also talked about the alien invasion and made a number of comments, which I put in an article, and there's actually probably 15 comments where Bill talks about people on Mars or UFOs or different things, and seemed to be very, very interested. In fact, even talked about the Roswell crash in a very famous speech that he made in Belfast, Northern Ireland. He actually referred to the Roswell crash And it was something that I always tell people when I lecture, that you've got to realize that a presidential speech is very planned. It's not something that they just talk off the top of their head. It usually takes weeks or months to write a speech, and it's all signed off. And in this case, he had received the Roswell report, a story that most people don't know. He received the Roswell report, the first one, in November of 1995, went to Belfast, Northern Ireland, to make this speech, and made this reference to a letter that he'd received from an Irish boy by the name of Ryan. And he said to him, "Ryan, if you're out in the audience tonight, here's the answer to your question. No, as far as I know, a UFO did not crash in Roswell, New Mexico." And then he said, "If the U.S. Air Force did recover alien bodies, they didn't tell me about it, and I want to know." At that point, the Air Force had to go back and do a second Roswell report, which they brought out in 1997. And that's the report where they talked about the bodies. And it was a direct answer to the president of, where were the bodies? You didn't describe the bodies in the first report. And then they had this crazy story about dropping dummies and people confusing. So Clinton, but you see how it's done indirectly. The president doesn't directly talk about it, but indirectly in a speech. And if you pick it up, you know what he's talking about and why it happened.
Yeah, in fact, you've been doing a lot of work in that area, and you're absolutely right when you talk about that. It's strange. They seem to be talking past each other on purpose.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have to sort of read between the lines, and then you have to go and try to find the documents that support that case. In fact, this morning, an interesting story, after I lectured this morning and I talked a bit about the presidents, a woman came up to me and said that Bill and Hillary Clinton may actually have seen a UFO. And so she's going to write me, and her sister owns a restaurant in Arkansas, and Bill and Hillary Clinton used to eat there all the time. And apparently the sighting was there, and she's not 100% sure whether Bill was at the sighting, but there was a number of Bill and Hillary's close friends who saw the object, and she knows for a fact that they talked to Bill and Hillary Clinton about this, and she figures that may be where Bill and Hillary got the interest. Yeah.
How about world leaders in general, besides presidents of the United States? Other places, do you think they have as much information or less or what?
But that's a hard question. I think the Americans have more. Like, I know I'm from Canada, and the Canadians got out of UFOs about the same time as the Americans. And very rarely did you ever hear these rumored stories out of Canada. I know the Canadian Prime Minister, who in the 1960s, his name was Lester Pearson, actually won the Nobel Peace Prize. And during his Nobel Peace Prize speech in 1957, he actually referred to the Martian invasion. And this may be where Ronald Reagan got the idea about the alien invasion, because he said how if we were invaded from Martians from Mars, the world would be united. And this was in his Nobel Prize winning speech in 1957. He later became the Prime Minister of Canada.
Sounds like he might have been giving a message, talking about talking past people.
Well, yeah, exactly, except that at that point he wasn't the Prime Minister. In the 1960s, he did become Prime Minister. And when the big flap occurred in Michigan in 1964-65, whenever it was, when J. Allen Hynek was involved in the whole swamp gas story, the Canadians were having sightings on the other side, and he had then become Prime Minister, and he asked for a UFO briefing. And he was actually the fellow who is the defense minister is still around and did confirm, yes, we probably did give him a UFO briefing. So the Canadians were interested. Churchill had, there's a famous quote that Churchill had written a letter, a memo in, I think it was 1951 or 52, and he said, somebody tell me what's going on here about flying saucers. But again, it comes down to trying to get the material out and finding out, because most of these briefings are done off the record, and because for them it's an embarrassment type situation as well. You want to be known as the president who believes in flying saucers or this sort of stuff. For example, Ronald Reagan, the story was told and a number of times about Ronald Reagan, that he was very interested in a number of subjects like ghosts. He was interested in Armageddon. He was interested in UFOs. He was interested in all this sort of stuff, and they actually had people inside the White House who would screen Ronald Reagan when he was with school kids. They would pull Ronald Reagan away from the school kids, because the school kids would tend to ask these type of questions about UFOs, ghosts, and all this sort of stuff, and Ronald Reagan had no reservation about talking, and he would just talk, and like his press secretary had said, you know, the goddamnness things would come out of his mouth. They just couldn't believe what Reagan was saying, and they actually had people that protected the president against saying this kind of stuff out in the public to embarrass them.
Now, what about the Reykjavik story of talking to Gorbachev about did that happen?
Well, that's the thing. That's one of the stories I'm trying to track down. That's an incredible story if that did happen. I know they did make the comment that Reagan, the first alien invasion remark that he made, was actually made in Geneva with Gorbachev. And he made the statement, and Gorbachev did respond back about the alien invasion. He said, I think it's too early to talk about this, and made some other comments. But there was actually this exchange in speeches.
So in other words, Gorbachev didn't chuckle or dismiss it as a joke.
Exactly. He didn't dismiss it. In fact, in one of his speeches, he replied back about this alien invasion idea to Ronald Reagan. But Reagan and him, I guess, in closed doors, I looked at the National Security Council files trying to find those behind-the-scene meetings to see if they actually did discuss it, and that's where I found the one toast that Reagan had brought up, the alien invasion remark, in Geneva with Gorbachev.
Well, Grant, we're going to talk a little bit more about presidents, and then we'll get to some other things here, but are you doing a book about that?
Yes, Stephen Bassett and I are doing a book, and it's in New York. It's with an agent right now in New York and being pushed around. And they're having some trouble. We're trying to figure out what the trouble is, because it's a book that you would figure would be jumped on right away. Stephen Bassett said there's some indication that there may actually be political pressure to stop a book like this coming out, because it does deal with Bush and deals with the interview that I did with Dick Cheney. So there's a lot of aspects that they may not want, or you may have the publishers in a situation where they don't really want to get into the libel, you know, trying to check, make sure that all this stuff was said.
Let's talk about the Cheney interview for a minute. I mean, he was on Diane Rehm's show, of course, and got a call.
Yeah, in Washington. There's a number of these major people. Some of the stories that we get are off the Diane Rehm show. And he appeared on the Diana Rehm show, and I've been on with Jimmy Carter twice. And the first time I was on with Jimmy Carter, they were going to take the question, and the show ended before I was actually able to ask him. And the second time, after 5 minutes, they came back and said, no, we're not going to take the question. And the question I ask all of them, which I think is a critically important question, for example, Jimmy Carter will always talk about UFO sightings and about his interest. I don't care. The only question I want to ask, if it's a president or a vice president, because these are the people who are running the show, these are the chief executive officer people that should know what's going on and should be briefed on the subject. So my question that I always ask is the question I asked Dick Cheney, because he was former Secretary of Defense, he was former Chief of Staff at the White House, he's the Vice President, and I said, Mr. Cheney, in all your jobs in the government, have you ever been briefed on the subject of UFOs? And if you have, when was it and what were you told? Now, this is just after he came into the White House, and I guess he was sort of caught off guard. This is the first time he went on a radio talk show, and I don't think he's been on a radio talk show since. He said, well, if I had been briefed on the subject of UFOs, it would have been classified and I wouldn't be talking about it, which shocked me, because he basically admitted this subject is classified. And I say, if it's classified, that means there's documents. If there's documents, that means they haven't released the documents. And if they haven't released the documents, there's a cover-up.
And that's one of the things I was getting about. I wanted to bring that up, was the general question, how difficult it is to get some of these papers you're talking about. Some things seem rather benign, but the government seems to not want to let loose of it.
Yeah, or the papers aren't even there. They're doing it, say, in private. Or there's a story told about Bill Clinton as to whether the president is even in the loop. The story is told by Stephen Greer that Sarah McClendon, who was a longtime White House reporter right back to the Roosevelt days, had said to Bill Clinton, she was interested in UFOs, that actually brought Stephen Greer to the for this big news conference that she hosted this thing at the National Press Club, and she asked Clinton. She said, "Well, what's the deal? Why can't you do something about? Why don't you do something about this UFO thing?" And according to her, Bill Clinton leaned over and said, "Sarah, there's a government inside the government, and there's nothing I can do about them." And if that is true, then you have the thing that the president may sort of be out of the loop. It may be something that they brief him only what they need to brief him, because there is another story that is told by Marcia Smith, who is considered to be the top expert in the United States on the Russian space program and also an expert on the American space program, writes, she's at the Library of Congress. And according to Danny Sheehan, a very prominent attorney who was involved as a consultant to a UFO study for Jimmy Carter, said that she had told him that when Jimmy Carter came in, As the president-elect, he had asked George Bush, who was then the CIA director, for Ford. And the former administration will send the CIA director to brief the new president as president-elect on intelligence matters. And, of course, Jimmy Carter had a UFO sighting, was very interested. So he asked the CIA director, George Bush, Sr., to produce the UFO files. And according to this Marcia Smith, who's at the Library of Congress, George Bush had said, you don't have the need to know. Curiosity on the part of the president isn't sufficient need to know. You're going to have to go to the Congress. You're going to have to get these documents declassified. And it's, again, sort of shows that many times, just because you're president doesn't give you the right to know about everything, unless you have a need to produce evidence that you really need to know about this.
Yeah, that's a pretty scary thought, but I guess it's actually true.
Yeah, it seems to be in some ways true, although Jimmy Carter, the story I've been working on for about the last 6 months is that Jimmy Carter did push hard enough to get a UFO briefing, and we had a guy that we thought was in the room, and he's apparently denied he was in the room for the briefing. But it does appear, like I told the story this morning about Shirley MacLaine, the story that the actor Nicolas Cage had been on the David Letterman show, and there he had said that Shirley MacLaine had told him that she had talked to Jimmy Carter, she was a friend of Jimmy Carter's, that and she had, of course, was very interested in UFOs, had written Out on the Limb, which talked about her UFO sightings. And according to Nicolas Cage on the Letterman show, he had said Shirley MacLaine told him that Carter had told her that he had gotten access to the bodies and to the craft, and that the thing was real. So 2 weeks later, Shirley MacLaine appears on the Larry King show, and a researcher by the name of Art Greenfield out of Florida makes a phone call and relates the story of what Nicolas Cage had said, and asks Shirley MacLaine, what did the president actually tell you? And she said, well, he didn't say that, but he did tell me when I wrote Out on the Limb that he would support me, that it was true, there were occupants, and that he tried to get the information out under the Sunshine Law, but that he couldn't and wouldn't, and which sort of indicated that he knew what was going on, and he was going to try to get the people's reaction by releasing this material, but there was, whether it was national security, whatever it was, there was something that he wasn't able to do it, even though he wanted to do it. It was blocked.
I think part of the problem is national security and all of that, but there's the political ramifications of it too.
Yeah, the political ramifications and this whole thing about nobody wants to be labeled as a crazy president. And the national security, I always said that if it comes down to disclosure type issues, if you're talking to the president and the president wants to disclose, I'm sure they could come up with 1,000 different reasons why, you know, the drop of the stock market and the fact that you're going to give free energy to countries like India and China and all this kind of stuff, that there's so many things that could possibly go wrong that you could scare the president to death. Like, well, is it really worth it, Mr. President, to release this? I know we had written a book about 10 years ago to illustrate this point with, we had chased around the former president of Payne State University, who had been chairman of the board of the Institute for Defense Analysis, which was the highest ranking think tank in the U.S. Defense Department, and he was chairman of the board. He knew what was going on, and he basically said to us, we were saying to him, a number of different researchers were interviewing him, and he was trying to avoid the questions and talk around the questions and stuff. And someone said to him, he was fairly old at the time, he was in his 80s then, and said, well, you're an old man, you should release this stuff, you have an obligation to release it. And he got very angry, and he said, look, we haven't blown up the world yet, leave it alone, there's nothing you can do about it, forget about it. And it was basically the thing, like, as you know, right now people are employed, you know, we have enough oil, everything's going along good. Nobody really wants to be the guy who's going to step out and rock the boat and take responsibility for all the things that could possibly happen.
Of course, you know, you're talking about digging into these things. It's pretty hard sometimes to verify these secret meetings to begin with. And before we come back, we're going to have a break here in a minute, but before maybe we have time to get into it, the Eisenhower story about going to Edwards. Did he go to the dentist? What was the deal?
Yeah, I was at the Eisenhower, and I spent about a week working on this story at the Eisenhower Library. And I know Bill Moore, who was I considered to be a very smart researcher, had done the same thing, had gone to the Eisenhower Library and had researched this whole thing. And he did disappear, there's no doubt about it. And it wasn't UFO researchers. The UFO story didn't break till about a month after the story had happened. It was the press who had found out that Eisenhower was missing, and the story had gone out in the wire that he had died. They stopped the story. The press secretary had to run back from a banquet. And all the research that we did, for example, the dentist, there was all sorts of thank you letters and stuff. There was no thank you letter to the dentist. There was
you're right about that. People probably don't realize that, but anytime you come in contact with the president, the PR machine goes into effect. Everybody gets a thank you letter or whatever. You get your picture taken, whatever.
And even I went as far as to check the Christmas card list in the White House to see whether he'd gotten a Christmas card. He never got a Christmas card from the president. You'd figure, well, if this was the guy that fixed the president's tooth, at least he'd get a Christmas card. He got absolutely nothing. Which
I mean, even our producer, Roberta Scott, got a card from Bill Clinton. So.
There you go. So so it seems to indicate that it was a cover story, that they were covering for something else. Now, I know I had some correspondence with the archivist because he was put out all this stuff, and I said, well, where'd you get this story from? And sort of had a little thing with after the Sala broke the story, or the Washington Post picked up the story, and they're still maintaining the story. And in fact, it was very insulting to go to the Eisenhower Library when I first went there, and they always ask you have an interview before, and they ask you what your subject is, and I had gone to them and said, well, I want to see all the UFO files. I think there's 20 pages of material in the Eisenhower Library, and they produced a sheet which had five items on it. One was a telex, one was something else, and I'm looking at this, and that's actually when I really got involved with you, with the presidents, is I figured 28 million pages and you've got five things in here, something's wrong, something's missing, there's got to be more material. And that's when I really started the search of trying to push and say, I'm going to find the files on UFOs with the president.
Besides, now, I was pretty famous for secret meetings. I mean, he went to Korea before he took office.
Oh yeah, he was a very secretive guy. Even they describe when he was briefed, he had to go. The guy that was briefing him, they took him through a restaurant out the back, down on an alley and stuff, so nobody would actually see that he was being briefed as president-elect. He was extremely, extremely sensitive about security.
We were in Eureka Springs, and you talked about the UFO capital of the world. Where is that?
Yeah, that's in the province I'm from. I'm from Canada, and I'm in the province right in the middle, is the province of Manitoba, which is directly for Americans, is directly above North Dakota. It is considered to be one of the coldest places in the world, and it was an event that took place. The National Enquirer was actually the one that coined it. The National Enquirer came up to investigate, and I was a very young guy at the time, and this is 1975, 76. I was the guy that took him around to the various places to introduce some different towns, all the people that were seeing this sort of stuff. And there was towns where the percentage of people was 80% of people had seen this thing. Just it was there all the time, and people would go out on weekends and try to see this thing. And I got involved. I had no interest in UFOs. I just saw it in the paper. I saw it on TV and this sort of stuff. They'd taken a film, and I figured, well, let's go see what everybody's looking at. What's the interest in all this sort of stuff? And went out there, and the first night I was out there, I saw this thing. I got fairly close, fairly good sighting. I mean, I was thoroughly convinced this was something very unusual. The second night I went out, two nights later, I saw it again, and it was at that point that I really got hooked and figured that I had to interview everybody in the area and find out what was going on. I wrote a manuscript, which actually has just been finished, and interview all these people. But the strange thing is that it went from February of 1975 to the fall of 1976. And then, as I always describe it, it's like the CIA took the drugs out of the water, and the sighting stopped, and they really haven't had a sighting in that area since. I talked to one guy there who owned the airport at Carmen, which is the main town where this was taking place. He claimed to have had 150 sightings during this 1.5 year period. And I asked him, I said, well, how many sightings have you had since? And he said, well, I had one in Phoenix. I said, no, how many have you had in Manitoba? And he basically hasn't had any sightings in that area since. But when the National Enquirer saw the extent of the flap and the number of people who were involved, they were prepared to call this the UFO capital of the world.
You know, you have these flaps or sightings all of a sudden. You've been doing this for a while. What do you think's what the reason behind that? I mean, do they certainly focus on the area or what?
It's kind of strange. I know when it happened, I used to watch the thing fly around, and we used to chase it, and it was just bizarre. I sort of looked at it, and it looked like it was just driving around burning gas. It didn't seem to be going anywhere. It was just flying around, and it really puzzled me what they were doing. The Carmen thing, there really is nothing there. It's just basic farmland. There's really nothing. It wasn't until when I went back to do a second follow-up to some of the people as to what they had seen and what they thought after 30 years, going back 30 years after the flap had occurred, that someone said to me, well, it's the missiles. And I said, well, the missiles? And he said, yeah, the silos. And I said, well, the North Dakota, they have a number of Minuteman missile silos there. And I said, well, how close are they to the border? And Carmen is about maybe 25 miles from the border. And he said, well, they're right at the border, and there's hundreds of missile silos there. And his contention was that the U.S. Air Force had been chasing these things around, and that they had come into Canada for a rest, and had told me a story about a pilot at Minot Air Force Base where they actually had captured one of these UFOs sitting above a missile silo. Four jets were scrambled and were ordered to ram this thing. And the fellow who was telling the story had said that when it came down, you could tell the UFO was coming right up through the formation and it wasn't moving, and he was in the way, and he backed out at the last second, and the UFO came up through the hole that he had created in the formation. And he said, it was interesting, but I wasn't prepared to die for it. So that may be one of the things, because in 1975, when this flap occurred, there was a huge flap of sightings, which it was called the 1975 overflight sightings along the Canadian-U.S. border at all the major U.S. Air Force bases that had missile silos, and Loring Air Force Base was one, Wurzburg Air Force Base, and Minot Air Force Base, Maelstrom Air Force Base, all these bases along the Canadian border. There was a number of documents that were recovered by the National Enquirer through the Freedom of Information Act. They forced these documents out, which described, they described them in the documents as helicopters. They were actually right inside the weapons storage areas, inside these nuclear weapons storage areas, inside these Air Force bases. And this seemed to me to tie in that if you were having this problem along the Canadian border at all these Air Force bases where they were chasing these UFOs trying to get them out of these Air Force bases, and then we're like a couple of miles away just on the other side of the border, that we're getting a flap, and in fact, the flap extended not just in Manitoba, where I was from, it extended down in a line through Minnesota, and a huge flap in Elmwood, Wisconsin, or in the Wisconsin area, which involved a famous book, Howard Bloom for the New York Times wrote a famous book called Out There, where he talked about a UFO working group. It was a top secret restricted group that had been formed inside the U.S. government to find the answers to UFOs. And one of the things, this was in 1985, they ran this this program. And one of the things they looked at was Elmwood, Wisconsin. They had actually sent people out, CIA put some money up, and they actually sent some of the members of this UFO working group to Elmwood, Wisconsin to try to figure out what was going on in Elmwood, Wisconsin, the sightings and stuff. And that was part of the same flap as we were, because they were getting the sightings. And I know Bob Pratt from National Enquirer, he'd be at my place and he'd say, well, there's a sighting down in Wisconsin. He'd fly to Wisconsin. I'll be back in 2 days. And he had the money being with the National Enquirer, but he was following this whole flap. So we knew even then that there was a flap going on that extended down into the United States, and that there was many more sightings than what had occurred in our area.
You know, you bring a good point about the missile silos. Any truth to that story? And I'm sure we've all heard it about disarming a missile, a UFO.
Yeah, I think that was, I believe that was at Maelstrom where they shut down the missile. In fact, there was a guy here who was one of the guards at Maelstrom who talked to me, I believe it was yesterday, and said he hadn't been there when that occurred, but he had been involved in sightings. There was, when he was there, one sighting around the missile storage area. And that seemed to be one of the other areas I researched is the guy who ran the Canadian government UFO program in the early 1950s, who is Wilbert Smith, who was famous for writing the top secret memo, had gone down to the United States, had written a top secret memo to the Canadian government in which he said he had been to the United States, he'd got information from sources in the United States and had been told UFOs exist, or flying saucers exist. It's the most highly classified subject in the United States, and they're working on this problem. And he had had some contacts that he believed was with the aliens, and that was his big thing back in the 50s when he was working on it, was that it was a nuclear weapons which was causing all the problems and the thing that they were most interested in. And the aliens had passed a message that he had said that the only time they would step in, they would let us do what we want, they would never interfere with our development unless there was a nuclear exchange. And at that point, the UFOs would step in and they would stop it. And in order to prove that they could do this, they would take, in front of the whole world, they could take the moon, split the moon in half, and put it together in microseconds to prove to the world that they could stop a nuclear exchange. And that was the big 50 message during the 50 with a lot of the contactees, was the nuclear weapons that they were most disturbed about. And this seems to reinforce the idea when you get them in weapon storage areas and over missile silos and stuff like that. I think it's going to become a famous story. Robert Emenegger, who was had worked on a documentary that he claimed was officially sanctioned by the U.S. by the Pentagon in the 70s, was approached in the 1980s. And in the 70s, he was offered the Holloman Air Force Base, famous Holloman Air Force Base film where UFOs land and the aliens get out and the surf stuff. The Pentagon pulled the film at the last minute before they did the documentary. In the 1980s, he talked about being offered all sorts of other films, and one of them dealt with weapons as well, and that was he called it the Vandenberg launch. They had launched a missile from Vandenberg Air Force Base, and he said the film, and he saw this film, the film was taken from three different angles, and it had two UFOs on the side of the missile, tracking the missile as they were going through, and the three different cameras, it wasn't a shadow, because the three different cameras all showed the same thing, and you've heard these stories about them downing missiles when they're launching from Vandenberg, and he said he saw the film, and this was an official top secret film. It was Mark Tuck's top secret on the canister, and it was of these UFOs tracking a missile test by the U.S. military.
It's been an incredible hour here, and we've been talking about several aspects of this, and you've been investigating these for a long time. You originally weren't very interested in UFOs, though.
Yeah, I can't ever recall having had any interest whatsoever or even thought about extraterrestrial life or anything. I did have some interest in early Edgar Cayce, and I always had an interest in the life after death issues that was starting, the out-of-body experience stuff was starting in the 70s there. Some of the early books were coming out. I had an interest in that, but I can't remember ever having an interest in UFOs. And yet when I saw my first two UFOs, after the second time I saw it, it's basically taken over my life. Since then, that's basically all I've done. It's sort of like it's in my blood and I've got to do it. And I've moved from UFO sightings, which really to me didn't really prove anything to me, or they proved something to me, but when I would tell my friends about it, they would just sort of, they had no interest whatsoever. And I figured, well, I'm going to prove to them this is right. And I happened to come across this fellow by the name of Wilbur Smith, who ran the Canadian government UFO program. I went, I interviewed his wife, I interviewed associates that worked with him, high military people, and the anti-gravity experiments that he had done. And from there, I told those stories, and people were kind of interested, but they still didn't believe. And that's when I ran across this Dr. Eric Walker with, 15 doctorate degrees and the president of Penn State University and friends with a number of the U.S. presidents. And we produced that book, and it got some reaction. And then he had a connection to the president, and I've just basically moved up the line. And when I got to the president, I figured, well, this is where we got to be, because this is the guy that should know. And when the president stands up and says, this thing's for real, as I always say, then it's time to strike up the band and play the last waltz, because the game is over. I mean, the dance is over when that happens, because nobody can overrule the president. When the president says it's for real, nobody can stand up and say, well, the president should have said that, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He holds an awful lot of weight. But it's very hard, a point I should make, it's very hard to get to the president. The president, since 1947, has only addressed the UFO question twice. Once was in 1947, Truman was asked a question at a press conference, and this was days after Roswell, I think it was 3 days after Roswell occurred, and was asked whether he had seen any UFOs or something to that effect, and he said, I only know what I've seen in the newspaper. And President Eisenhower faced a question in December of 1954. There was a big flap of sightings going on in Europe, and he was asked about UFOs, and he said, a friend of mine told me there's nothing to it, something to that effect. A guy that I respect in the military told me there's nothing to it. So he evaded the question. But since 1954, and that's 50 years ago, almost to the day, 50 years, the president has never had to answer a UFO question in a press conference, on record, in front. So they're protected, and it's almost like we're afraid to answer the question. And if you actually ask them, like you'd say, well, why doesn't the president talk about it? Well, perhaps the president doesn't talk about it because nobody's asked him about it.
Well, yeah, that's one of my private theories anyway about much of the political shenanigans. Press forgets to ask the right question.
Yeah, and the press, one of the stories is told when you referred to before the Hubble thing, Hubble made a statement, and in the press conference, the Clinton's press secretary had to face this, and the press secretary is very good at avoiding questions. And the question was asked by Deborah from the New York Post, Deborah Oren from the New York Post. She stood up and asked the question. She said, she asked Clinton's press secretary, did Hubble ask the president about UFOs? And he said, he avoided the question. He said, no, we gave that job to the alien. I don't know if you know the Weekly World News story. There's this alien that always predicts who's going to win the next president. That's who they're referring to. He said, no, we gave that job to the alien. And so she had a follow-up question. So she stood up and she had a follow-up question. She said, I'd like to know if what's in Mr. Hubble's book is true. And then he said, I'm not going to comment on what people write in books. So she had her follow-up question. She couldn't ask any more questions. She was interviewed later, and she talked about this. And she said, I sat there and waited for somebody else in the press corps to ask the next question. And she said, they all rolled over and played dead. And that's what happened. No, nobody asked a question. Nobody asked a follow-up question because it was a very critical thing. And they just sat there. Everybody's afraid to have their press credentials pulled. You're in the White House. You're a big shot. You're going to play it cool. You're not going to embarrass anybody, the president or whoever. And that's basically what happened.
And basically, you don't end up with like Helen Thomas and go from the front of the room to the back.
Yeah, exactly. Because the president does call on you, and if you say something stupid, I mean, he doesn't have to call on you. I'm sure they have certain people targeted that this guy's going to ask a question that you don't want to respond to, so you just don't ask, and you can have your hand up for 3 years. Nobody's going to ask you anything.
Basically, that goes on. No doubt about it. I think you'd agree with that.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that.
Before we go to the break in our last segment here with you, I have to ask, since you're Canadian, it's tougher to get secrets out of Canada or the United States?
Well, the United States has the secrets. I don't think Canada has really any secrets. Like we have, we always make the joke, like we have, we bought 3 submarines from Great Britain, paid billions of dollars for them. Only one is operational, and we have bought a bunch of F-18s, and there's only 3 of them that are operational. So we basically have nothing really to hide, whereas the Americans have the technology, the money, and the military-industrial complex, and they actually have some secrets that we'd like to hear about.
It's been a fascinating hour. I don't know what I'd like to discuss most, presidents or the UFO capital story. They're both good.
Yeah, I like the president. The UFO capital story was something I hadn't lectured on it in 25 years. I used to give it in the area where I live to high schools and schools in the area. It's interesting. It's sort of my story, and I always said with UFO sightings, you can either believe or disbelieve all the things. Because I had about 100 sightings, and we had these little ground lights that were on the ground, and I saw those quite a bit, and I'd take tours of people to try to photograph them and stuff. But it was still sightings. It really didn't carry any weight, and it was sort of just my interesting story of how I got involved. The president's is carries a lot of stuff that people like to hear. People like to hear stories because they know who all these people are. They know their names. They know stories about them, and it's part of American history that people really like to hear.
Got anything on either of the Bushes?
Yeah, the Bushes, both of them were questioned. Charles Huffer, who's from this area, Arkansas, actually confronted both the presidents. He confronted George Bush Sr. when he was on the campaign trail. And George Bush Sr. was, as we said, former CIA director under President Ford. And Huffer asked him, he said, when you become president, and I've got the actual tape of this, he said, when you become president, are you going to release the UFO secret or the UFO thing? And President said, yes, I will. And then he said, yeah, you know all about this. You're a former CIA. You know what's going on. And George Bush had said, yeah, I know some of it. If you can tell me what it is. At the beginning part, he said, if you can tell me what it is, yeah, we'll release it. And at the end, he said, yeah, I know some of it. George Bush Jr., when he was on, or George Bush, yeah.
The one that's here now.
Yeah, the one that's running the show now. When he was confronted, he was with Dick Cheney. He was going into a speech I think it was in Rogers, Arkansas. He was going to impeach Charles.
Interesting, these things come up in Arkansas.
Yeah, well, the Huffer is from Arkansas, and every time they come through, campaigning, he goes after them and manages to get to them, and that's part of the thing is you got to get to the president, you got to ask the question. And a lot of people just won't ask the question. Huffer didn't have any reservations about doing it, but he asked him, "Are you going to release the UFO information to become president?" He said, "Yeah." He went into the speech. He came back out, and he was with Dick Cheney when he came back out. And then he saw Huffer, he recognized him, and he said, "Yeah." He says, "Don't worry, we're going to get right on it." He says, "We're going to do it. Dick Cheney, it's going to be the first thing he does when he gets in the White House." And so this was on tape, although the tape quality is not very good. And so, of course, we waited when he got into the White House, and we figured, well, let's see if he keeps his promise. Really, nothing happened. And then I got involved with a story with, I don't know if you have a story about Laura Johnstone. Laura Johnstone was a real radical. She came from South Africa, had been in a number of demonstrations, liked to be on the edge. She went on a hunger strike, and she wanted the president to honor his promise to Charles Huffer. And I was writing articles about her and describing who this woman was, and I went to California for a couple of days with her and this sort of stuff. And we were all afraid this woman's going to die. She was up to 42 days or whatever. And Charles Huffer was afraid. He's trying to talk her out of this hunger strike. She wasn't eating. And she actually got a comment, or they actually got a number of the press people actually got through to Dick Cheney's office, and they would make no comment on it. But they were actually forced to deal with this subject, that there's a woman on a hunger strike because the president had promised to release the UFO information and he wasn't doing it.
I've noticed that there seems to be a lot of difference between campaign rhetoric and when you get in there.
Yeah, it's very easy to promise stuff, and then when you get in, even if they may even have believed.
We're not necessarily saying you're not sincere. I mean, even though I have a smirk on my face.
Yeah, and they may even have believed that they were going to do it. Like Jimmy Carter may have believed, yeah, when I get in, I'm going to do this, and gets in and then starts getting briefings and realizes that things aren't as easy, like employing people or fixing things. It's not as easy. It's easier to say it than when you get in and suddenly realize, we better start cutting some corners here.
As you say, there's lots of advisors sitting around with thousands of reasons why you shouldn't say it.
Yeah, and a lot of people who try to play cautious, and I think that's what politics is all about. I mean, nobody's out there. In fact, I said when people talk about disclosure, I always say disclosure, my impression is disclosure is going to come through pressure. At no time does anybody in the government ever stand up and say, this is a good idea, we'll do this. We're just going to go do it without thinking about it. Usually, if you take a look at women's voting rights, it was a good idea, the women's voting rights. But it was women, thousands of women protesting outside the White House. The Vietnam War was a bad idea when they got into it. But the Vietnam War did not end because some politician or some president said, this is a bad idea, we're going to get out of the Vietnam War. It was people protesting by the hundreds of thousands, and that forced the issue. And that's why I say we have to force the issue of UFOs, that it may be a good idea, but good ideas aren't normally things that they are generally going to do.
They usually get elected on.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It doesn't win you any votes. That's what I said, you know.
Yeah. It's been a fascinating hour. We hope you get that book published. I think it might be more than just somebody worried about a little bad PR, but maybe I'm just a little too cynical.
Well, thanks, Jerry. I appreciate it. And if we don't get it out, we'll put it on disc. I mean, that's what I do with mine, and I just distribute them and just try to get the word out. And in exchange, lots of people give me stuff that I can use for, and to me it's like a chess game. It's trying to figure out the next piece and get as much stuff as I can. So to me, the money and all that kind of stuff, that doesn't mean anything to me. I'm into it for the game.
Thank you very much, Grant.